Everyone, and welcome back to The Modern Democracy. It is so wonderful to have you here with me today. Before I even jump into today's episode, I just want to thank everyone for their kind words regarding my past episode on the Indigenous voice. I'm so glad that so many people have found it helpful in enriching their understanding of our upcoming constitutional referendum, and it really reminds me why I chose to actually start this podcast in the first place, and that is to empower young people by allowing them to understand and engage in Australian politics. So if you've been paying attention to the news lately, or you've just been a keen observer of domestic current affairs, you'd probably know that we have an election coming up in New South Wales. And as with everything in Australian politics, the time that we're in can be both very exciting and busy for political fiends like myself, but on the flip side, it can also be very isolating and downright confusing. So in today's episode, I'm taking you through a comparative policy analysis for our major parties in the 2023 New South Wales election. We're going behind the headlines, sporadic announcements, and TV debates to see what our politicians are actually offering us on key election issues as we get ready to cast our votes, and compare and contrast what our parties think about certain topics. My hope is, as always, is that this episode is helpful in allowing you, as an individual voter, to figure out what policies, ideas, or political parties you align with, and think about the people you want to represent at our nation's highest political office. Before you watch this episode, however, if you would like some further context or if you haven't already, I'd recommend listening to my previous episodes on how government works and the Liberal v Labor episode. This is going to give you some excellent insight into exactly what government does and why it actually matters. But it's also going to help you distinguish the ideological differences between the two groups that dominate our national conversation. So sit back, grab a drink or relax and put this episode on the background while you work. And let's get straight on into today's episode. Even get into comparing party policies, it's really important that we know who our major players are in this election. So representing the Liberal Party of Australia, our major Conservative Party, is current Premier Dominic Perrottet. He is basically the Prime Minister of New South Wales, as he represents the current government in New South Wales Parliament. For context, the Liberal Party has been in government, leading the state, for exactly 12 years, over a decade. Dominic Perrottet is what we call from the right faction of the Liberal Party. This means that he's generally more conservative than other people in his government. And it's for this reason that while some people really like him, Perrottet tends to come under great scrutiny. His Twitter thread would lead you to believe that he's pro-Donald Trump, anti-abortion, and he did get caught for wearing a Nazi uniform at a costume party. In short, Dominic Perrottet is our key Liberal Party rep for this year. But on the other side of the aisle, representing the Australian Labor Party, is Chris Minns. Chris has been in politics from 2015 onwards. He was a former firefighter, has a degree in public policy from Princeton University, and is what we call from the right faction of the Labor Party. This means that he too is generally more conservative than other people in his political party. He's known for being quite laid back, even tempered. However, many people in public debate do tend to think at times that he might actually not be doing enough. Labor's campaign this year is centering very closely on the idea of a fresh start, going off the fact that the Liberals have had the worst reputation after they were absolutely decimated with Scott Morrison last year, and they're believing that New South Wales is ready for some good old progressive change. So these are our two key figures, Dominic Perrottet and Chris Minns, who are representing our two biggest political parties. Now onto the policies. So if you remember back to my episode on how the government works, you know that in Australia, state governments don't actually deal with huge matters like climate change, defence, foreign policy, or anything of the like. Instead, they deal with smaller issues. So on the topic of health, the Liberal Party, known as the Coalition, is proposing the following. We have 10,000 additional healthcare workers over the next 4 years, $11.9 billion on upgrading local hospitals, $1.7 billion to hire 2,000 paramedics and 30 new ambulance stations, $7 million into female reproductive cancer research, a 12-month trial for contraceptives and UTI medications administered by pharmacists, and free support services for women who experience miscarriage on a promised $2 million investment. This is a comprehensive health policy from the Liberal government. And yes, while it all might seem well and good, a lot of people in the public zeitgeist have been critical of this Liberal Party stance. The Australian Nurses and Midwives Association has spoken out for years about serious understaffing issues, underpayment, and under-resourcing of the health system in New South Wales. This funding from the Liberal Party, they believe, may not be enough to reverse years of damage. Further, in my opinion, while shifting the role of primary care more to pharmacists may temporarily be good for their businesses, it does tend to be a little bit of a band-aid fix for our shortage of GPs nationwide, particularly if you're like me from areas in rural and regional New South Wales. The Royal Australian College of General Practitioners has also opposed this Liberal Party health policy, with fears that because pharmacists are not actually trained in the ins and outs of patient diagnostics, it may lead to quote-unquote bad health outcomes and place more pressure on the hospital system long term. So while this policy is generally quite comprehensive, there are definitely some extra things to consider here. The Labor Party instead proposes this on the topic of health: to enforce a minimum amount of nurses and midwives per shift to maximise care, hire 1,200 more nurses and put 500 more paramedics in regional New South Wales, have 600 new hospital beds in Western Sydney and renovate Western Sydney hospitals, and have $70 million for 3 new helicopter bases in regional New South Wales to reduce emergency response rates. This is again similarly a very comprehensive health policy. However, it's clear that Labor's policies are targeting key health areas towards marginalised and regional areas, which are usually ignored when it comes to receiving the same substantive outcomes as our metropolitan areas do. However, Labor still has come under fire though. While they are proposing a minimum number of nurses and midwives per shift, many key unions are pushing for an actual patient-to-nurse ratio in state hospitals, not just a minimum amount per shift. On the whole, there's a key focus towards targeting regional New South Wales, which is really quite an important area to target. The next key policy area we have is education. The current government, the Liberal Party, are proposing this: $8.6 billion on schooling upgrades over the next 4 years. New schools in suburbs like Gregory Hills and Leppington, but these have not been officially finalised. An increase of 15,000 permanent teaching positions in 2023. $253 million for intensive learning support tutoring schemes that were started in COVID-19. And 12,000 free TAFE places, as well as 500 new preschools across regional areas and Western Sydney. This is a comprehensive set of education commitments from the Liberal Party. However, the high levels of promised funding prompt one key question in my mind. Where is this money actually going? You see, the Liberal Party at both the Commonwealth and state level do have a very long history of funneling money into already very well-off private schools that don't actually need it, with private schools currently funded at 106% above their schooling resource standard, while private schools are only at 87% of their normal school resource standard. And it really does not take much to look around and witness resource disparity between the two. While some private schools have state-of-the-art stadiums, other schools don't even have an aircon. Paired with leaked documents from the 2022 New South Wales government that suggest that an unprecedented crisis in public school systems is due because of chronic underfunding for 12 years, it's definitely something to be aware of. Labor proposes this on the topic of education: 100 new preschools built in their first term of office, $60 million on upgrading existing preschools, 10,000 permanent casual teacher positions, while auditing and liaising with teachers over how they can provide enough admin support to reduce their workload, a permanent literacy and numeracy tutoring program for disadvantaged children, 6 new public schools that are all government funded, and hundreds of new TAFE centres with thousands of free apprenticeships to upskill people in things like the trades. This is also another very comprehensive set of educational commitments. Like the Liberal Party, the focus is on building the internal capacity of teaching staff and upgrading schools, which can only be a positive. But what is a standout in this policy in my eyes is the auditing of teachers on how we can reduce their workload. As according to Grattan Institute modelling, we know that teachers in government schools do nearly 16 and a half hours of unpaid work per week, and it's predicted that between 2020 and 2025, 50,000 teachers in New South Wales will leave the profession. Really figuring out not how we can just get more people to become teachers, but instead fixing how we can improve the conditions for our current ones, this policy definitely has some real potential for positive change here. The next major issue we have is housing, and this is a big one, particularly because it was a very key theme for our 2022 election of the Australian Labor Party at a federal level, and according to the Demographica Housing Affordability Index, house prices in Australia are currently 15 times the average national income, which is pretty insane. So the Coalition is proposing this. First, increase protections for renters. This hasn't been specified. Number two, new lease agreements with 3 to 5 year terms in the hope of giving them increased rental security. And three, allowing first home buyers to not pay stamp duty on subsequent property purchases or have it paid over time. As you can see, housing policies from the Coalition are a little sparse and they are vague at best. We can infer from this that housing, a major crisis in New South Wales, is not particularly on the Liberal Party agenda. The formation of new lease agreements, in my opinion, doesn't really address increasing rental insecurity long term, or actually respond to increased rental prices through landlords technically abusing their power. But even if changes were to be made to our current rental legislation, we don't really know what they would be because the Liberal Party is yet to come up with a tentative plan. Also, from an economic perspective, recent SMH and Grattan Institute data modelling revealed that the New South Wales Liberal Party stamp duty policy, requiring either you have to pay upfront or $400 a week plus 0.3% of the property land value, is actually going to cost 3 times more than Labor's proposed policy. So here's what the Labor Party is proposing instead. Number one, counter to the idea of the Liberal Party stamp duty being paid over time or upfront, depending on the person's choice, the party plans to repeal this and spend $722 million to ensure that first home buyers pay zero stamp duty on properties up to $1 million. They plan to outlaw evictions from rental properties unless it's on reasonable grounds, to ensure that renters can have pets and that landlords will have to go through a very extensive application process if they have a reason for why they want to refuse a pet, $30 million to increase housing supply on the New South Wales South Coast, with 30% of this being used for social and affordable housing, and 3 long-term housing sites for people with mental illnesses and psychological disabilities, with the first site being built on the Central Coast. This policy has more substance. There's a clear focus on increasing housing supply, which if you watched my previous episode on housing affordability, you'd know that a lack of housing supply is a really key cause of inflated house prices right now. The focus on social housing for me is really key too, because there is actually a 10-year wait list to access this service, and this category increased by an extra 8,000 on top of the already 60,000 people who were waiting on there after COVID-19, according to the Australia Institute of Health and Welfare. There's a clear plan for legislative reform here to address the power imbalances between renters and landlords too. All in all, it's a very key target for the Labor Party at this election. The next area we have is transport and infrastructure. This is a huge portfolio for a New South Wales government, and both parties have brought some very serious policies to the table for voters. The Liberal Party plans to do the following. First is $1 billion to upgrade regional roads, and another $1 billion to upgrade Western Sydney roads. $500 million to local councils to help them fix potholes in New South Wales, and another $250 million to finalise 4 Sydney metro routes. $600 million to commence Parramatta Light Rail in 2024, recruiting more overseas bus drivers to end severe shortage, $350 million for 2,000 commuter car parks in Beverly Hills, Como, Emu Plains, Edmondson, Park North and Riverwood. This is again another substantial policy from the Liberal Party. There's a very clear focus on trying to tackle key issues relating to transportation, because as many of us know, potholes and inaccessible road systems can be personally frustrating, and it can definitely stop the spread of goods and services across the state. What I'm slightly skeptical of, however, is the process that will be implemented for ensuring that local councils actually spend their allocated funds efficiently, particularly because of the mismanagement issues at the local level. For instance, the Central Coast Council's outstanding $82.6 million debt. I'll be curious to see if there's an independent review process in this stream if they're re-elected. All in all, it's a pretty substantial and strong policy from the Liberal Party on transportation. Labor proposes a similar strong policy lineup on the issue of transportation too. First, similar to the LNP, there is a set $1.1 billion allocated to upgrading regional roads. There's $225 million to build critical evacuation roads, bridges and levees for flood-affected communities. There's going to be the building of trains in New South Wales to create a minimum of 1,000 jobs. And there's going to be an industry task force to improve bus services, and the creation of the Parramatta Light Rail project will happen in their first term of government. Policy is very similar and strong and substantial like the Liberal Party. While I do think the policy definitely could be expanded and improved upon to include some more metro routes, both policies clearly allocate funds for upgrades. What I do like about what Labor is proposing is the industry task force and the decision to reinvest in New South Wales' internal transport capacity, because I think this is very valuable. The Liberals have a very long history of what we call privatisation. They take public services built by the government or the public sector and then sell these assets off on contracts to private companies to generate a quick buck. But a recent House committee report found that the bus privatisation has actually led to quote-unquote worse services and higher costs for consumers, because businesses will charge commuters more and sacrifice the safety of people generally because they need to make money, they're businesses, they have a profit incentive. So Labor plans to take control of the bus sector again to ensure that they will operate more efficiently and that prices will potentially be lower. And we know that we have heaps of service issues with transport if you've heard about recent train and bus delays. By choosing to actually spend money on manufacturing these trains here and optimizing our transport systems instead of constantly outsourcing them to private companies, if elected, we may see some real change here from the Labor Party. The next issue I'm covering today is cost of living. Cost of living is a huge issue. With inflation nearing 8% due to external supply chain pressures, the prices of everything have gone up drastically. Unfortunately, there are very limited tools that the government can use, but here's what's being offered to us. The Liberal Party is proposing the following. Number one, drivers can claim 40% of their tolls as a tax rebate once they spend $375 in 1 year. This rebate is limited only up to $750, and it's estimated to help 500,000 drivers. Small businesses will get up to $1,000 over 2 years to cover things like liquor licenses and event fees. And finally, there'll be an $850 million future fund for children, where they'll be able to spend this money on education or housing when they turn 18. Parents are required to make an annual co-payment of $400 in an account for every child under the age of 10, and then the government will match these contributions up to $400 each year until they're 18. Majority of these policies are pretty substantial, and I do tend to agree with them on the whole. However, I do have an issue with the Kids Future Fund, and I'm going to actually call it out because even though I try my best to be partisan, I'm actually not going to endorse policies that I don't think are A, quality, or B, in the best interest of ordinary Australians. First off, factoring in inflationary trends, very few people can set aside $400 for their children's bank account. And for those who can't meet this amount, the government is going to match less compared to the families who can pay the amount. Because, for example, a single mother living paycheck to paycheck is not in the same financial position to contribute to the fund as much as an upper-class dual-income family from Sydney will. Secondly, this policy is not means-tested at all, and it leaves families and kids behind when they can't contribute as much to their savings account. As Shadow Treasurer Daniel Mulkey puts it, at a time where interest rates are skyrocketing and mortgages are exploding, many families just don't have the spare money lying around to put in Mr. Perrottet's bank account. Finally, my third criticism centres back to my views generally on LNP policies. They're often stopgap measures that never address the underlying causes of why we might actually need a kids' future fund in the first place. Instead of building houses to increase supply and take the pressure off house prices to lower them for the future, instead of funding social programs that actually support marginalised communities and maybe will allow them to save more, instead of investing in our public school system, this fund is actually just a stand-in for real social action. Labor proposes this instead. They're saying that drivers will not have to pay tolls with a weekly cap of only $60, and that's estimated to help about 51,000 drivers per week. Tradies and truck drivers will have their tolls cut, saving an estimated $3,800 a year. There's a plan to appoint Professor Alan Fells AO, the former chairman of the ACCC, to create a systemic overhaul of the toll network and make it cheaper. Abolish the 3% public sector wage cap. This policy lineup is again comprehensive like the LNP. I like the idea of overhauling the toll system and listening to professionals on the matter. Toll prices affect everyone majorly, but they have a particularly disproportionate impact on low-income households. What I like about this policy is the eradication of public sector wage caps, because this is something that I am actually hugely passionate about. When we say to workers in the Australian public service, the workers who run this country, that they have to take a pay cut and they don't get to receive the same wages as everyone else, we disproportionately impact women. London School of Economics modelling shows that 73%, think about that, 73% of people who are affected by these wage caps are women. On top of the fact that Australia has a serious wage gap problem, where men earn on average 250 more a week than women do for the same amount of work. These public sector wage freezes are the things that contribute to what we call the feminisation of poverty in Australia, because women are always hit the hardest. This policy under the Labor government is something that has been needed for a very, very long time. And I'm really excited if the Labor government is elected to see this policy implemented in real life. All right, everyone, that concludes our 2023 comparative policy analysis on the Liberal and Labor governments for our upcoming state election. As always, I encourage everyone to go out and do further research if you'd like to know more, because the quality of our democracy genuinely relies on the active citizenship of all of us, and we need to hold our representatives accountable. I do hope you found today's episode helpful and you have a bit of a clearer idea of what's actually happening at this election and what political party you might be interested in supporting. If you haven't already, please make sure to go follow us on Instagram at The Modern Democracy. You're going to want to stay tuned for the next few episodes. Have a wonderful day, and I'll see you soon.